politics should be about life, about music, about poetry, about hope. People are naturally creative, and young people particularly so. Exploring people's creativity and giving them space to do it and not be embarrassed about being creative is very important.
Hello and welcome to Pop and Politics,
the podcast where we delve into the world of music with politicians.
I am a pop fanatic, Alex Charles.
And I'm the politics specialist, Isaac Marley. Do love a little bit of Lil Mix though when they were around.
We are going to be talking about how music influences different people, how it's linked into the politics world, and also finding out what our MPs are listening to in the society today.
So with all that being said, turn up your volume and get ready to immerse yourself into the world of pop and politics. And today we are introducing a politician that really needs no introduction. However, we do have one written down for all of you listening today. It is the former Labour leader and now independent MP for Islington North. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please welcome Jeremy Corbyn to the podcast. An absolute pleasure to have you on today, sir. Welcome to Pop and Politics.
Thank you for inviting me. Great to be here.
How are you doing today, Jeremy?
Fine. I'm busy doing stuff in the constituency, and I'm going into Parliament a bit later on because there's votes on the public order bill, which is about restricting the right to demonstrate, which I feel very, very strongly about. So I'll be voting on various amendments to do with that bill. And then tonight I'll be back in the constituency. There's lots of issues to deal with here on housing, immigration issues, planning, and generally people's stress in life, which usually turns up at my doorstep. Oh yes, it's busy all my life, and I actually quite enjoy being busy, but I also enjoy creativity and the way people lead their lives in music, in art, in theatre, and so on. And we had a very interesting discussion last week at Picture House Cinema, where we had Martin Ware of the Human League coming, showed us a film about the development of Sheffield Stéphonique, which was a very advanced recording studio in somebody's flat in the 1960s and 70s, which was about how you got young musicians to be able to record high quality stuff, which they could present then to record companies, and the way in which pop music has to be made accessible. And then we got into a discussion about the funding of the music industry, which is complex, but also about, in a sense, the return of live music, post-pandemic, of course, but also the lack of rehearsal spaces for young musicians, which I was interested in. And locally, I'm also involved in supporting Angel Shared Theatre Group, which is a fully accessible theatre group. There's no charge made to any young person coming in. And young people write their own plays and put on a public performance every 3 months. And so I'm very keen on creativity in young people, and which is why I pushed very hard for our manifesto at the last two elections to include what I call the pupil arts premium, which would give ring fence funding to every school so that every child would be able to learn a musical instrument, take part in some stage activities, and also more space and time for art and creativity, because people are naturally creative, and young people particularly so, but they often become embarrassed. So I'm involved in doing that, and I'm also in the process of producing with a number of other people a book on the poetry we love and why we love it. And when we did a performance, well, not a performance, an open reading of poetry one evening in Liverpool with Len McCluskey, former General Secretary of Unite, I was very surprised that hundreds of people came and a lot of young people came, clutching their own poetry. And then they sort of said to me during session, can we read our poetry out? I said, go ahead, be my guest. And so we had a lovely evening of young people reading out their poetry, some of which was romantic poetry, some of which was escapist, some of it was very gritty reality about violence, crime and abuse. And poetry often expresses people's thoughts in a way they would never write down in an email or a letter or a message. So it's to me, exploring people's creativity and giving them space to do it and not be embarrassed about being creative is very important.
I agree with everything you've just said. Poetry is an amazing, amazing form of art, and I sort of admire your work ethic in terms of supporting arts and supporting young people in that industry, because I myself am very passionate about the music industry, passionate about pop music and stuff like that. A quick question I wanted to ask you was, sort of, who did you listen to when you were sort of in your early sort of political stage in your career, and sort of in university, who were sort of the main artists that you were listening to in that sort of time period?
Well, I suppose I'm a child of the 50s and 60s, and I left school in the late 60s, 67. And that was, of course, the year of the great, probably one of the greatest albums ever done, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It's an incredible piece of music. To me, that was an amazing piece of music. But I was also involved then, as I am now, in the peace movement. So quite a lot of protest music at that time. And I was completely bowled over by the voice of Joan Baez and her singing. So it was a kind of mixture of pop and folk music. But I went to live in Jamaica in 67 for I was a volunteer teacher and youth worker and so on there. And the music in Jamaica was interesting because it was coming out of the ska period into rocksteady and moving into the greater development of music from Jamaica rather than imported American music. And that was a fascinating period to me. So you had a combination of some of the more traditional steel band type music with Bob Marley and all the others that became very famous at that time. And so I was fascinated by the music there. And it was a kind of assertion of Caribbean culture over imported music from the Anglosphere, i.e. Britain and the United States. So, having said that, of course, the Beatles were popular, as were the Rolling Stones and others, but it was the growth of Bob Marley particularly, who was then not terribly well known, but obviously became huge global figure later on. So to me, that was an interesting period, and I've still got some of the records I bought in Jamaica at that time. I then went on a solo journey around Latin America, South America later on, and listening to music there, which was a very interesting combination of rhythms created in Brazil, but you could see the African theme that came from it. Carnival is very much a combination of all of that, those musical themes, and of course these those huge bands they have rolling down the street, which was quite incredible to see. So my musical development was very mixed in that way. But I also, actually, you might be surprised by this, really enjoy classical music. And I often have classical music on at home, either Radio 3 or Classic FM or whatever is playing. I do enjoy the genius of Mozart, incredible, but also so much others. Those were all musicians, many of whom came from a very poor background, were sponsored by very wealthy people, often to write music to request. But you think of how many millions of other people didn't get to go to school, didn't get to play any instruments, or we didn't know about it because there was no method of recording them. And a lot of the popular music of the time is clearly lost because it was never written down, it couldn't be recorded, and it just passed on. It's only since the electronic recording systems at the turn of the 19th and 20th century we begin to understand the musical wealth that is there in history, which is obviously no longer with us. And so I do think that oral tradition is something that shouldn't be forgotten. So to me, music is an expression. And then you read where they've been recorded in people's diaries, the sort of protest songs going back hundreds of years against injustices and land and so on. And of course, the tradition, the oral tradition of the way in which the enslaved people of West Africa, taken across the Atlantic to the Caribbean and the Americas, sang often music based on church rhythms, based on what they'd picked up there, but also the lyrics were obviously completely different. And so that's where you get the spiritual music as well. So I think we should always have an understanding of the power of music to excite people, to get people through very difficult times, and to inspire them.
Talking about difficult times, obviously, we're going to go straight back to the 70s now. And obviously, you mentioned that a lot of your music when you were growing up was influenced by the 50s and 60s. But obviously, you started out with your political career in the 70s. And I wanted to ask, what kinds of music were you into when you first started out in politics in the 70s? Was it similar to the music you grew up to? Or was there kind of a change as you grew up into politics?
Well, music always evolves and develops, but people are very heavily influenced by the music they picked up as teenagers and young people, because that's the one that the time that people always remember. And if you look at the very clever advertising jingles, where they're looking for a particular age demographic, they play the music of the young, of what was young at that age. So if you're looking to attract people who were growing up in the 60s, you play that. If you're looking at 70s, then you play something different. You might play Boney M or something like that. And so on into the 80s, where you might play some different music there. So what was I growing up to? An awful lot of listening to Radio 1 or Capital or whatever else as I was going around as a union organizer, and also trying to use music in political campaigns as well, which was seen as unusual at that time. Because I do think that politics should be about life, about music, about poetry, about hope, and I think any kind of public event should also include music with it, and I always try to do that at any public event that I'm involved with. So we have used a lot of music, and I enjoy that.
Absolutely, of course. And it's very interesting that you mentioned Radio 1 and Capital, because I listen to Radio 1 and I listen to Capital myself, and I think you'll agree that one of the biggest artists that gets a lot of radio airplay and often uses music in protest as well as getting airplay on Radio 1 and Capital is Stormzy.
Absolutely. Doesn't he just, yes?
Absolutely, yes. And obviously, I'm sure you'll remember his performance at Glastonbury as well.
Hey, Glastonbury! Let's go! My brother's old. I tell you, got to link me at the coffee shop. Getting freaky in it. She's taking bloody shots. Then I finish with her. She's just a talk about.
And just based off of that, I just wanted to ask you about Stormzy and the fact that he very much is kind of a Labour supporter. And I wanted to ask you whether or not Stormzy plays or has played in the past a big part in your musical and your political life. How much has Stormzy been involved in kind of your political side of life?
Well, Stormzy made some very interesting public statements in 2017, before the general election came up, very supportive of the general trend that we were putting forward politically. But also he was crucial in persuading young people they'd got to vote in the election and they had to register to vote. And so we did a huge campaign on voter registration and got, we think, between 500,000 and 1 million people registered to vote who may otherwise have not done so by his endorsement of the right to vote and many others as well. And so, yes, a huge influence. And it was a kind of very strange event. It was the magazine GQ gave him an award and asked me to present the award to him, which I did at an event. It was fantastic. I think his books and his music shows that he is not just a musician, because nobody's just a musician, they're everything else as well. He's also a very thoughtful person and a great inspiration on how people think, not just an age demographic. There's a much wider audience for him than that.
Honestly, Stormzy is probably one of my favourite artists. I've seen him live many times, and I was there in his iconic Brit performance, and it's truly inspiring to see an artist sort of connect politically with a youth demographic, because I think it's important nowadays to sort of target them at a medium that they listen to. I sort of want to ask a question. So when you were obviously appearing at Glastonbury, everyone was chanting "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn" in the Seven Nations Army sort of theme. Do you know where that actually originated from?
Yeah. Absolutely. It was one day we were doing a very long day of events in the election campaign. We started with an event in Birmingham, which was an election rally with a lot of people there. And it was a stage in the round where you have to sort of walk out in the middle of the audience and speak with the audience on three or four sides of you or even behind you. So it's quite complex to deliver a speech, but it's a really nice format for people who feel included in the event. We were then supposed to go to the Wirral and then to Liverpool at the end of the day. Unfortunately, the M6 was closed that day, so we had to go by car on a very circuitous route. The trains were down as well, I think. And we drove to the Wirral, and I did a first visit to an old people's facility, a care home, which was interesting and nice to talk to them. We then did a rally on the beach at West Kirby, where there were thousands and thousands of people, and I was concerned to make sure we got the timing right, and the thousands of people on the beach for this election rally didn't get engulfed by an incoming tide at the wrong time. But it was an amazing event, much bigger than anybody expected, and we had trouble getting out of there in time. And then I was invited to go to Wirral Live, which was at Prenton Park, which is at the Tranmere Rovers ground. So we drove to Prenton Park and went in there for the music event. Now, I was quite sort of concerned about this, because I said, well, look, I'm very happy to come to this festival, very happy to listen to the music that's going on there. But do people really want to hear a political speech at a music festival in Prenton Park? And so I said, look, I'll go on the stage, but I'll be pretty brief. So I was invited on the stage, and my job was to introduce Reverend and the Makers. And so I go on the stage, and I talked about the joining up of sporting history, of working class culture and popular music, and the way in which the greatest musicians have often come from very difficult, very poor circumstances. And it's young people with this utter determination that they are going to make their music and they're going to play it come what may. And I was talking about this, and then there was a chant developed in the crowd. Now, when you're on a stage, it's actually quite hard to hear what the crowd are saying, because they're all some distance away. So I could hear this chant going on, and I wasn't really sure what it was or why they were chanting. And I thought, oh God, this is one of those days that's not working too well. And then I looked at the crowd and could see there was more and more people joining in, and they were all smiling and laughing. And so I stopped speaking, and then I could hear the chant. It was wonderful. As you know, it sort of took off from that point. And then I concluded my speech, I couldn't really say much more because the chant had sort of taken over. And then Reverend the Makers came on. And so they recently did a concert in my local assembly hall near the town hall in Islington, Upper Street. And so I went along to their concert and had a lovely chat with all of them before they did the concert. Then I went to the concert afterwards, and we had the after-concert party. And what a wonderful group they are as well. well. So that's how it grew up, and it developed from there. So the it was Reverend the Makers at Prenton Park.
Beautiful stuff, lovely. And I mean, it must have felt like a brilliant experience, like being out there, hearing the crowd, just hearing them chant your name. It must have been a beautiful thing being on that stage.
Well, there's that, but it was also breaking through in the sense that I was getting condemned by the media all the time for everything, basically for getting out of bed in the morning and doing anything. It was sort of like, as far as many of our mainstream media could, I could do nothing right. And what I realized was, because of the vision we were offering of a fairer, more egalitarian society, what we're offering was hope for young people and enter university fees and so on, all of that, we were actually connecting with people. And the campaign rallies we did, and I did 100 rallies throughout the country during that period, were often young people and older people returning to politics, and our support went up from 24% to 41% during the campaign. Obviously, we didn't quite make it, and I deeply regret that, of course. But as a campaign and a lightening up of people was incredible. And last night I was coming back from Halifax, and I was at Leeds on the station, just talking to young people there who said, oh yeah, I was at the rally you were at. And I've also met some people that were at, when I was in Liverpool last month, saw some people that were there at Prenton Park and said what a magic experience it was. And also, of course, there was later that summer, that was after the election, when we did the event at Glastonbury. What I love about Glastonbury, by the way, if I may say so, is that it is obviously historic. Michael Eavis and I were both together at the Shepton Mallet Folk Festival in 1970. We didn't meet each other. We didn't know each other then. And it was in a muddy field, but you had incredible bands on at that time. And he then got the idea of Glastonbury, which was basically a peace festival to raise money for CND. And it's grown ever since then. But what I like is the way they basically appeal to just about all musical tastes. So you have Stormzy, you have Paul McCartney and so on, who are very different ages and very different approaches. And I think it's an incredible event. And speaking there was, to me, an enormous honour. My team in my office were all very excited about Glastonbury, and everybody wanted to be there because they all wanted tickets for Glastonbury, understandably. And they wrote various ideas of what my speech should be. And then I kind of read all these ideas through and thought about it and scoot around with ideas. And then we get to the stage and they say, well, you'll be on in 10 minutes. And I sat at the back, which is incredibly noisy.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned not liking speeches, because I have a feeling that obviously Glastonbury has different musical tastes and different musical opinions. But, you know, there's you, of course, there's Jeremy Corbyn as yourself. But then there is also your brother, Piers Corbyn. And I'm very interested to hear what his musical taste would be like, because he's seen as a, you know, as a pretty wacky character in the world of politics. The mainstream media has his own views on Piers Corbyn as well. And I just wondered, I mean, would you say his musical tastes are like his wacky political lifestyle? Are they similar to yours? Are they completely different? Would he be on the alternative stage at Glastonbury? What would Piers Corbyn be like? What are his musical tastes like?
Well, you basically have to ask him that, but I would imagine he would be into the alternative stage. I don't think he spends an awful lot of time listening to a lot of music, but he obviously grew up at the same time as me and would remember all of that. So, not sure. It's a very hard one to answer that, because when I next see him, I'll ask him what his musical tastes are. So you've set something off. You've set something off there. So what I did was then completely changed my speech for Glastonbury and just said what I said.
Good stuff. Very, very good. And it's good that you've had that particular power as well. Now, interestingly enough, talking in terms of power, one of the main kind of factions within your party, I feel, kind of grew in popularity towards the time of the 2019 general election. Of course, I'm talking about Momentum. Momentum were obviously a growing movement towards the time of the 2019 general election, and I just wanted to find out a bit more about it because they definitely played a part in your popularity within the Labour Party as we geared up towards the election. But what did you think about them as a movement in your party? Did you think that they helped you get to where you needed to get to? Did you think they were controversially a hindrance to your movement? What did you think? I mean, obviously, the result was what it was at the end of that election, but how much of a part did Momentum play in kind of helping or hindering you, Jeremy?
Well, Momentum was set up at the turn of the year of 15 and 16. I wanted to have a group who were interested in community organizing and mobilizing people in communities who are not themselves necessarily affiliated or aligned to political parties, because political change doesn't come around just from politicians in Westminster or just from voting. It comes from popular actions, you know, campaigns on the health service, campaigns on public open spaces, campaigns from the right of people to roam, and so many other things. And so I wanted Momentum to develop like that. It grew quite well in membership, and did a great deal of work in campaigning and supporting people in particular constituencies, in particular elections, but above all played a very big role in voter registration, which I mentioned about Stormzy as well, because that was key to us, because obviously if people are going to vote, you've got to get them registered to vote in the first place. So they worked very hard on that and had a very big influence in bringing people into particular constituencies to campaign. So I obviously was pleased with the efforts they put in and the way in which they brought in people who had hitherto not necessarily been involved in party politics. They're not particularly sectarian. I wouldn't say there's necessarily a fundamental political thread that runs through it, other than one of wanting to see a more robust alternative based on socialist ideas and values being presented both within the party and to the public as a whole.
Now, it's very interesting that you do have these particular thoughts on Momentum, and obviously with a lot of these artists, some of the artists, as we know, we've mentioned Stormzy, a very well-known artist, but we have well-known artists, but we have also particular overrated artists as well.
Overrated,
exactly.
Artists,
Alex,
can be a questionable sort of topic.
How do you define overrated artist?
I was literally just about to ask you this question. I think me personally, I'd describe an overrated artist as someone who only sort of has a one-hit wonder. So they're not sort of consistent in the sort of medium that they sort of perform in. Was there sort of any artist that you would say in your era that was sort of overrated as such?
Well, there's always... I was always skeptically suspicious of the way in which particular artists got on television, got on radio in the 70s and 80s, because prior to internet and social media, the only way people could hear about music was playtime on radio, players' time on radio. And I think there's an awful lot of questions there about how certain artists therefore become allegedly very popular because they get so much airtime. And it is about giving people an alternative voice. And what was interesting was the festivals which grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s and so on gave space to lots of artists who would otherwise not get any space at all. And so it is about access to music and access to ideas. And so I just love the idea that young people should be able to play the music they want to play in the venues they want to play in. And that is surely good for our community as a whole.
Everyone sort of has this one artist that they sort of resonate with really well, or sort of got them through a difficult time. Is there sort of an artist that has got you through a hard time?
There is no one artist. I think historically, because tragically he died far too young, Jimi Hendrix, quite incredible. If you listen to Jimi Hendrix music, listen to the guitar playing, listen to the lyrics, and listen to the way he presented himself, and what he could have contributed in the future had he not died when he did, was quite incredible. So I just remember being utterly devastated the day I heard that Jimi Hendrix had died. His music still stands the test of time, I think. It's still there.
Yeah, 100%. I'd even say sort of in that era, I'd say Prince as well is definitely an artist whose music still stands to this day. There's a saying that legends never die, and I think he will be one that has impacted music greatly.
Well, you could listen to Jimi Hendrix now, you can listen to Prince, you can listen to quite a lot of really brilliant artists of that time, and if you play them to somebody who is, say, in their late teens or 20s now, and they never heard them before, and you say, when do you think that was recorded? They would be really struggling to work out how old it was, because it does feel very up to date.
I actually want to know, who is your favourite artist, your favourite musician?
Of all time? Oh, God, that's a real hard one. I'll tell you what, I'm going to stick with Jimi Hendrix.
That's a good choice. Yeah, we'll take that. That's a good choice.
We'll take that. Thank you. But it's such a massive choice. It's quite a hard thing to do. So I enjoy just listening to lots of different types and different styles of music, because I think that's what motivates us all. And music has to be all the time. I went to a UB40 concert recently, and it was absolutely huge. It was at Wembley, and they were great. It was good. And what was interesting to me was, now UB40 are obviously of a time and of a place. The UB40 was the unemployment benefit form number 40, and they were set up as a protest group against the sort of Thatcherism and all that went with it. And they were from Birmingham. And what was fascinating to me was that I sort of assumed, quite wrongly, that the audience they would attract would be of a certain age of people who remember them when they were founded. Not a bit of it. It was a massive age range of an audience. And I thought I went along with my son and his partner, my youngest son and his partner. And we didn't, you know, it was just great. He's obviously in his 20s, and I'm my only age I am. And it was an amazing appeal. And so what I really enjoyed about it was that sense of togetherness of the whole of the audience, just enjoying the music.
This has been a wonderful recording of Pop and Politics, but just before we do wrap up today, we're going to introduce you to a little feature that we'd like to try out with you, Jeremy, called Trash or Stash. In this particular feature here, we've got 5 tracks that are currently in the top 40 right now, bringing it right up to date with your musical choices. And we just want to just kind of use this as a tester to see what kind of songs you'd put in your playlist, what kind of songs you'd put away from your playlist as well. We've got a couple of clips that we'd like to play with you today. And we're going to start off with a brand new up-and-coming band from South London called Flow. You might have heard them.
My absolute favourite.
Oh, yes.
I love this band so
much. Absolutely. They are currently absolutely doing bits of the game right now. They're doing well. And obviously, Cardboard Box was a big release towards the end of last year. But I want to find out, Jeremy, from you, take a listen to this. This is called Losing You. Would you stash this in your playlist, or would you trash it? Take a listen.
You don't know what loyal is. I'm so done with this. You're only giving 10%. Always lift you up and never let you down. That's the reason you were keeping me around. I couldn't see myself without you.
So a bit of soul, a bit of R&B. Would you trash it or would you stash it, Jeremy?
Stash it.
You'd stash it.
Stash it. I love it. I love it. And I also love some other musicians, particularly ones we've worked with, like Emily Sande and Clean Bandit. Fantastic groups.
Lovely stuff.
They do great stuff.
Beautiful stuff. So that's one for the playlist. That is Flow, Losing
One,
You.
Definitely that one.
Absolutely.
Definitely,
as rated by Jeremy Corbyn. There you go. Good to listen. Right. The next one is currently the UK's official number one, Jeremy. But would you stash this in your playlist or would you trash it? Take a listen.
Cry, but then remembered I
That, of course, is Miley Cyrus and Flowers, Jeremy Corbyn, Trash or Stash?
Stash.
You'd stash that as well? I okay, would, another one to the playlist.
Because it's different and it makes you think a bit. It's great. Yeah, I would keep
good
it.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Absolutely as well. I think definitely, it's definitely the chorus as well. It definitely kind of gets you as well when Miley Cyrus definitely turns a corner as well. And she's like, you know what? Self-care is important to me. I'll take that for myself. We absolutely love it. All right. So another quick one that I want to jump in for you, Jeremy, is a brand new up-and-coming artist by the name of Katie Baser. She's currently one of the future pop queens, if I do say so myself. She's coming through with quite a good... She's coming through with a good couple of tracks at the minute, and this is one of hers, X and Y. Take a listen.
You're not my ex, you're just my Y. Like, why'd you mess up my whole life? 'Cause I'm a 10 and you're a 5. You're not my ex, you're just my Y. I invested in you like crypto.
So yeah, there you go. We got into the song a little bit, but we just had a little sob.
Sounds a bit... The song sounds full of pain.
It does. I think that...
it sounds like real true-to-life pain, that one.
Yes.
I think we should all go through a bit of pain before we get the pleasure. True. So, yeah, let's keep that one.
Lovely
as well.
Stuff. Lovely. This is looking like a clean sweep from Jeremy Corbyn, which we love to see. As It Was by Harry Styles. Let's have a little listen. So, As It Was by Harry Styles, what are you thinking, Jeremy?
I like it. I'd keep the beat going a bit longer before you start bringing the lyrics on that one, because I think the beat there is nice and the drums there is good. But yeah, I'll keep that, but I'd like to see that change in it. But who am I to tell any musician what to change anyway?
Absolutely.
You never know, we could have a Jeremy Corbyn, Harry Styles collab one day.
Possibly.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, I'm sure we could have a chat about lots of these.
Absolutely.
Get Sam Fender to come along as well. I like
yes.
him.
Yes. Good, good, good.
Are you a huge Sam?
Yeah, I think he's great. Yeah, he played in Finsbury Park last year, and the Finsbury Park Festival is obviously slightly controversial locally because of the crowds and all the rest of it. And I have mixed feelings about that because of that issue, but it's fantastic to see so many people coming along and really enjoying live music, and that's what life should be.
Well, Jeremy, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. It's been incredible getting an insight to your music world and sort of the music you listen to. It's just been absolutely incredible.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. Music is the motivator of people, whether they realise it or not. Let's make sure the music is there for all time for everybody.
Absolutely. And Jeremy, what a fantastic quote to finish on. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that of course was the former Labour leader and now independent MP for Islington North, Jeremy Corbyn. Thank you very much for being on Pop and Politics today. Thank you.